and streaming on the web since 1996, this is Cinematic Sound.
Hello again, I'm Jason Drury and welcome to another of the continuing series of film, TV and video game composer interviews on Cinematic Sound Radio. Overcomer marks the anticipated return of filmmaker brothers Alex and Stephen Kendrick after their number one box office hit, War Room, and their second collaboration with multi-award winning composer and producer Paul Mills. Paul Mills has been creating music for over three decades. Born in West Texas, Mills spent the early days of his career in the studios of Music Row, producing and recording artists like The Imperials, Wayne Watson, Phillips, Craig and Dean, Trela Paris, and New Song. Over those industrious 10 plus years, Paul's production efforts helped to craft a staggering 40 number one singles. He also produced and co-created the highly successful album concert series The Young Messiah, an annual Christmas tour boasting a wide variety of talented artists. The accumulation of such a wide range of accomplishments earned this busy musician his first ever GMA nomination for Producer of the Year early in his career. Since the accolade, others have been added to that list, including American Songwriter magazine's Christian Producer of the Year, Best Score at the Gideon Film Festival, and multiple platinum and gold-selling albums and compilations. Through his work as a producer, Paul was led to the filmmakers The Irwin Brothers, when he produced music for the Roadside Attractions music biopic I Can Only Imagine, starring Dennis Quaid. Some of Paul's other film credits include the critically acclaimed Woodlawn, starring Sean Astin, Against the Sun, starring Garrett Dillahunt, Tom Fenton and Jake Abel, Kill the Man, starring Luke Wilson and Joshua Malina, and Still Breathing, starring Brendan Fraser and Joanna Gosling, among many others. In September 2019 for Cinematic Sound Radio, I had the privilege of talking to Paul Mills via Skype at his home in Texas. We talked about Overcomer, his collaborations with the Kendrick and Irwin brothers, and his career in film music in general. As well as our chat, during the show, you'll be hearing music from the aforementioned Overcomer, and also some of Paul's other memorable scores. Paul Mills, tell us about Overcomer.
Well, Overcomer is a New Faith film by the Kendrick brothers, and it basically follows two main characters. There's a coach, and then there's a young girl who does cross country. The small town coach, he loses his championship team because the big manufacturing plant in the town closes and hundreds of families have to move. So he's lost his big goal of winning the state championship in basketball. And then one of the other main characters, Hannah, is a 15-year-old cross-country runner who lives with her grandmother, and she's pretty bummed out about life in general. She has asthma, so she has challenges even running. So Overcomer, in a nutshell, is about these two unusual paths meeting, and it's a story about how they find their identities and something more important than just the temporal things of life. They actually help each other on this journey. So it's really neat to see, and it was fun to score. But by the end of the movie, they have overcome obstacles that are preventing them from finding their true identity. You know, obviously the coach's identity is not just his basketball team. It's his faith. It's his family. And the same thing for the young girl. Her identity is not just going to school and running cross country. There are just deeper things. And so for me, it was nice being able to score these emotional journeys.
Now, this is the second film you have worked with the Kendrick brothers after War Room in 2015. How much collaboration did you have with them on both scores?
Yes, the War Room was interesting. What was nice about Overcomer is having worked together on War Room, we sort of were able to go back to that shorthand of communicating to each other that we had developed on War Room. We did the typical things that composers and filmmakers do. We had an initial spotting session for War Room, and so I was able to sit with both Alex, who is the director, and Stephen Kendrick, who is the producer. And we talked about music. We watched the movie. They had some temp score, but not a lot. So we were able to talk through all that stuff. And then I went to my place in Nashville, and they went back to their place in Georgia. And we communicated with software over the net. And I was able to send them mock-ups, and we developed the cues in pretty much a typical way that composers work with filmmakers. But Alex is really good. He's very decisive about what he feels works and what doesn't work. And the other thing about the Kendricks is they are really big believers in strong themes. They want people to leave the theater humming themes. They want themes that are singable, that are strong. So they carried that over into Overcomer. And so with Overcomer, again, we wanted strong themes. The difference was that they wanted a bigger orchestra, and they wanted everything to just to sort of be more epic. But the collaborations were pretty similar. The nice thing about Overcomer is we already knew each other and were familiar with each other, so we could get right to work.
How big an orchestra did you have for Overcomer compared to War Room?
It was probably twice as big as the one for War Room. On War Room, we had probably, for instance, the string section was probably 20 strings. On Overcomer, we doubled that. So we had 40 strings, and we even did some stacking in a few places where I would have them put mutes on and do a pass. And Overcomer, we sort of did the same thing that Hans Zimmer and some different people do, where they actually record the section separately. So we recorded, we had big string dates. And then we had a big brass section, and then we did some woodwinds, and all those were combined together to create the sound that you hear with Overcomer.
How did you go about scoring Overcomer?
One of the most challenging parts of Overcomer was there's a big championship race, and it's probably the longest continuous cue that I've scored so far to date. In Woodlawn, the opening is over 8 minutes long. But this scene that I did in Overcomer is over 11 minutes. If I can talk a little bit about my process on Overcomer, the process that I started with was, of course, when I came back from boot camp, I had a script and I started experimenting with thematic ideas that I could make little quick mock-ups and send to Alex and bounce off. So we thought about different things. I knew I wanted big, majestic themes for the run scene. So I started on that 11-minute run scene, and I actually worked several weeks on it. But one thing that I came to the conclusion was I couldn't work on it yet because I didn't have all my other themes developed. And it was like I needed more themes to be able to get me and to be able to develop across that whole 11-minute span. So I told Alex, because he had wanted me to do the run scene first, too. And so I had a conversation with him. I said, Alex, man, I need to go back to the beginning. I need to develop our themes. I want to develop the Overcomer theme. I felt really strong about having an Overcomer theme that would open the movie. And I want to have this important theme with Hannah, the young girl. There was some other angst kind of themes, which are like crisis and reconciliation themes, I call it, where John and his wife have a little crisis and then they are reconciled. So I started from the beginning then and just composed more in a linear fashion, just doing cue after cue and getting approvals on those mock-ups. So by the time I got back to the race, I had all this wonderful grist for the mill as far as all my thematic material that I could then bring together in a wonderful developed way.
That was The Last Race from the film Overcomer, with original score composed by my guest today, Paul Mills. Now, Paul, how long did it take for you to compose the score for Overcomer?
We had a full day of strings and then one more three-hour session of strings. And then we had probably 6 hours of brass, probably 3 hours of woodwinds. That was about it. I think that, yeah, I didn't have any choir. I had choir in War Room. I didn't have choir on this score. Most of the percussion was mine. And then it probably took me, once we got all that compiled and cleaned up, which takes about a week for, you know, you want to go in and you're trying to remove all the noise, all the people hitting their stands and stuff like that before takes and things. So we get all that edited up. And then it probably took us a good 2 weeks to mix and start sending stuff to LA.
Now, Paul, listening to your wonderful score for Overcomer, I did notice a very large orchestral soundscape. Was the score performed acoustically with orchestral samples or a bit of both?
I, like a lot of composers, I have a huge orchestral template. I have a main computer and four slaves that run all the massive sample libraries that I use. Every cue starts in the box with a mock-up. I want it to sound as realistic as possible so that Alex and Steven have, or whoever I happen to be working with, there's no doubt in their mind how the cue's going to sound. So a lot of what I kept are some of my drum programming. I have these massive drums. I almost wanted to make those run scenes almost superhero in scope. So I kept a lot of my drum programming. The strings and the brass and there's not many woodwinds. Those are all real. Every now and then I will supplement the low end strings with some Arco bass samples just so I can really have that low-end girth. And then a lot of times I'll do the same thing with brass. I might add just a little bit of my low-end brass to really give it that big, big scope and that big cinemascope. Now, what I do for the mixer who's going to remix the film is we mix my score in 5-1, and we do an overall 5-1 mix of all the cues that sounds like the way I think it should sound. But then what I do is I do like 10 or more 5.1 stems. So we've got high strings, low brass, high percussion, low percussion. So I break it out like that. So if the mixer wants to, he can open those stems up and he can adjust like maybe the percussion. In fact, I got this request from the mixer. There was one percussion instrument that I use that's kind of a that adds that sort of unnerving excitement during the race scenes. But it was interfering just a little bit with the sound effects of their sneakers hitting the dirt. And they wanted that sound effect to be able to come through better. So I put the little, I put that on a separate stem for them so that they could mix it up and down as they needed to. So it's fun collaborating that way, even to the very end with the guys out in LA.
Now, Paul, tell us more about your previous collaboration with the Kendricks, War Room.
Oh, okay. I'll tell you a story about that. I had been introduced via email by the Irwin brothers to the Kendricks because I had worked previously with the Irwin brothers. They introduced us online via email. This was probably back in 2013 or 14 when I first was introduced to them. I did a thing that I call New Music Monday. Every Monday, I would send them an email with a cue from one of my previous movies, and I would say, hey, I just want you to start your week on an up note. Here's a cue from so-and-so. And I just leave it short. So every Monday, I'd send them New Music Monday. I guess it was probably around the first part of 2014 or 2013. They called me up, and they said, hey, you're on a short list of people who want you to work on the next movie. And I said, oh, really? I said, so what's your timetable? And so they told me the timetable, and my heart sank because I already had a film finishing and another one starting right in that same area. I hung up the phone, and I went down and talked to my wife, and I said, all this time I've really desired to work with the Kendrick brothers and have prayed for it, and here it is. It's coming. I'm going to have to turn them down. So I just had to talk to her first. I went back and compiled an email and said, you know, guys, I can't be a good steward to you guys or to my clients that I have right now by doing this. I'm going to have to say no. And so I didn't hear from them for a while. My wife and son and I were eating, and I get a call, and it's Stephen Kendrick. And so I walk outside to take the call, and they said, man, Paul, we really want you to do this movie. What would have to happen to make that happen? And I said, well, we're going to have to pray for a scheduling miracle because right now I'm just slammed. And they said, well, man, we're going to start doing that right now. We're going to get everybody we know. I mean, the Kendricks are big prayers. They have all these people that pray. And so they did. And it's crazy, man. In a week and a half or 10 days, I get a call from this one movie that's supposed to be starting. And they said, we're having some artistic differences between the director and the producers. So we're going to have to postpone for probably 2 months. And then this other movie that I was working on, the same thing happened. They said, hey, we're going to push our deadlines out. We don't really know when we're going to need final music. It's going to be at least 2 months. So this parting of the Red Sea happened, and I had this 2 month window that I could work with the Kendrick Brothers. So I called them up. I said, well, you guys must have a direct line because the time has opened up. So I drove down to Albany, Georgia, where they live. And we sat in their studio and just got to know each other. And both Steven and Alex were there, and we went through the whole movie. We just got along, and I told them, I said, hey, let's don't waste any time. If something's not working, tell me right away. Don't try to save my feelings because I don't have any where it comes to film scoring. It's your vision. I want to enhance your vision. So what works, works, and what doesn't, doesn't. You know, let's find the best idea. We finished, and I was going to start recording in February. They were going to start mixing the final mix in L.A. the first week in March. In February, Nashville had the worst ice storm they've had in 100 years. It shut the entire city down. So right on the weekend where we were supposed to record the score, the entire city shut down. People can't get anywhere. They had to cancel all the sessions. Luckily though, I have a great contractor, and he was able to book it all just a mere week away. So what I had to do is, as we finished a reel, we would go ahead and shoot it to L.A., and then we'd go on to reel two, and then as soon as we finished it, we'd shoot it to L.A. So they had to kind of stair-step it that way. So a lot of interesting things on War Room.
Thank you.
That was music from the 2015 Christian drama film War Room, directed by Eric Kendrick, with original music composed by my guest today, Paul Mills. My name is Jason Drury. Now, Paul, you've been creating music for over 3 decades now. How did your interest in music start, and how did you get into the music industry?
Well, my parents loved music. My dad, he loved big bands. In fact, when he was a kid, he was in cover bands that would do Glenn Miller and Tommy Dorsey and stuff like that. He was just a farmer in North Texas, but he loved music, and he had an audiophile stereo system with big speakers and a tube amp and everything. So I would grew up listening to Glenn Miller and Tommy Dorsey and Frank Sinatra and Bing Crosby and all these people. In addition, he loved big orchestral records, too. So I listened to a lot of Henry Mancini, like a lot of Henry Mancini's films and Henry Mancini's instrumental albums. And he had this series called 101 Strings, and they would do the pop tunes of the day. So I was listening to all this beautiful music. And when I got older, junior high school, I was always in bands and choir. Early on, I played piano and organ for both choirs. I played trumpet in the band. And I always had a rock band going too. You know, me and my buddies, we'd get together and we'd do the music of the day. And we'd play for just little dances around the town and in the surrounding area. And then after all that, I graduated from high school, moved to the University of Houston and went to the School of Music there. They didn't like commercial music there. It was all very legit orchestrations. You learn about the classics and the classical composers and how they wrote. And so all my orchestration classes and writing classes were like very legit classical, except for this one professor. And he was like the black sheep of the faculty. He actually did commercial stuff. He did commercials for different companies there in Houston. And he did music for the annual Shakespeare Festival that happened in Houston. And so I actually went to him and I said, can you teach me about film scoring? Because I would love to know more about it. So he did. He went to the chairman of music and we created a separate elective for me to take privately with this guy to teach me the basics of film scoring. So I got to learn by doing, but also there would be other producers and engineers coming in from like LA and New York, and they would work there. And I would be assisting and I'd be watching, how does a producer work? And how does an arranger work? And how does an engineer do this, that, and the other? So I learned all those skills over the years. I learned how to be a good engineer, a mixer, a producer, an arranger. Then I started working with a couple of bands and artists that were in this sort of gospel contemporary Christian market. And I had some success. And so I had a record company from Nashville say, man, what are you doing in Houston? Move to Nashville. We can keep you busy. So I moved to Nashville and started working again, doing producing and this, that, and the other. How did that dovetail into film scoring? Well, one of my friends from San Antonio, Texas, was a director. And he's actually the guy that I probably did my first scoring for. They were just little documentaries and little short films. And this was while I was still working at that studio in Houston. Well, I moved to Nashville. He moved to LA. He had written a script and he was trying to get this script sold to somebody. He found this rich lady in Seattle and she footed the bill for this little movie called Still Breathing, starring Brendan Fraser and Joanna Gulling. And it's just the most wonderful little art house sort of comedy drama. And I was brought in to score. He was actually the only one initially that wanted me to score the film. The film editor, the producers were all against it. They thought I was going to ruin their movie, to be honest. But I went out there. I actually lived in LA for 2 months and I built a little studio in an apartment, made it as impressive as I could because all these filmmakers were going to come and listen to my cues. And after the first one, the film editor spoke up and said, man, I really like this music. This is great. So I was able to do Still Breathing and make many connections through that movie. Got to be good friends, especially with the film editor, a guy named Sean Albertson. He's actually a pretty well-known editor. He's worked with Sylvester Stallone on Rambo and The Expendables and a lot of big movies like that. And producer of the movie is a friend of mine, too. Those two people ended up getting me film gigs later on. It kind of works that way. So I'm in Nashville. I've done a couple of 3 films. The Still Breathing was a nationally released feature film. So that got me noticed by people in LA. And then I met the Irwins along that time and worked on their films and this, that, and the other. And then the biggest thing that happened for me is when we finally go down the line and we get to War Room, War Room went number 1 on the Labor Day weekend, September of 2015. So that got me noticed. You know, that ended up, long story short, it got me into interview with agents, and I got a really great agent, I got a really great publicist, and I got a really great manager now. So they're all helping me do what I want to do. That's kind of how it all happened.
Tell us about your collaborations with John and Andrew Irwin.
I met them a long time ago. They were doing a documentary on 9/11, and an artist friend of mine had the opportunity to have a song in that documentary. And long story short, it didn't work out, but I met them, and they wanted me to send some of my stuff that I'd done on earlier films and documentaries and things. So that started sort of a collaboration that I did a couple of documentaries. They did a biblical series, Old Testament stories like Abraham and Isaac, and some different, I think it was 4 or 5 biblical stories. But I did those little short films. That led to a little movie that the Irwins did called October Baby, which was about an abortion survivor who has grown up. She's probably 19 or 20. And she actually wants to find her birth mother. It's the story of that journey. And that movie got the Irwins noticed on a bigger scale, and it kind of got me noticed on a bigger scale, too. So they had the opportunity to do a movie called Mom's Night Out right after that, which I didn't score. They actually worked with some people in L.A. And then their next movie was going to be Woodlawn, which was a sports movie, a true story about their dad, who was the chaplain for this high school in Birmingham, when they first started busing and integrating the schools. It was during that really kind of almost terrible time of unrest. And it was the whole story of how this football team was changed. And Tony Nathan, who, if you look at college football history, is one of the greatest running backs in college football history. It was all about him. And they actually had started with a different composing team. And I got a call from John Irwin. And he said, hey, dude, I really think this is in your wheelhouse, because it's a sports movie, yeah, but what we really want is sort of a superhero origin story where Tony Nathan, he doesn't realize he has these superpowers in running, but along the line, he starts having a hint of it, and then he's mentored, and then, boom, he is able to use his superpowers. So I did a little mock-up overnight, and I sent it, and they just loved it. So I got to work on Woodlawn with them, and it was a crazy schedule because they had already spent a lot of time. So I only had about a month to get it ready to go, and it was an epic score. I mean, it's like probably at least 90 minutes of music in Woodlawn, and it's like less than 2 hours long. So it's a lot of music to write, especially epic music, this kind of this superhero epic music. And then to get that recorded and everything ready for them. But we did it. We got across the finish line. That led to me, to them calling me again when they came to their big, big breakout film, I Could Only Imagine. The challenge on I Could Only Imagine was you have a group called Mercy Me. A lot of people know who they are, and they had that breakout song, I Could Only Imagine. But what does their music sound like before they get signed to a record deal and get hooked up with a producer? It's a music biopic, so there's a lot of scenes where they're doing their songs. So we had to go back and reimagine what those songs would be like before they got all dressed up in the studio and were produced in this major kind of way. So that was a lot of fun. I got to produce all the songs on that movie. Then they're doing their sequel. They're like doing a biopic trilogy. Their next film that they're doing is one, the story of Jeremy Camp, who's another Christian artist who has a great story. So it's another music biopic. So we've already recorded all the songs for that. We had to go in the same way, kind of reimagine what his songs would be like. And what's interesting on a biopic like that is Jeremy Camp was really huge in the 90s. A lot of his big songs were in the 90s. So there's a particular sound of Christian music back in the 90s that just wouldn't be palatable to a modern ear now. So we had to go back in, and the way Andy wanted to treat it was more of a singer-songwriter kind of vibe. So we had lots of fun reimagining those songs for that. And that's what I'll be working on, that finishing that up right now. That movie is in post-production. They've been editing. So we'll be finishing that up pretty soon before the end of the year.
Thank you.
That was Opening and The Run from the 2015 sporting drama Woodlawn, directed by John and Andrew Irwin, with original score composed by my guest today, Paul Mills. My name is Jason Drury. Now, Paul, you mentioned earlier that you started with the Irwin brothers on documentaries. Was your approach to scoring documentaries different to where you compose your features?
It seems like most of the documentaries I worked on, they can be wall-to-wall music, but it's not the kind of music that has a theme or calls attention to itself. A lot of times it's a tone or it's an emotion that you create with chords, a certain chord progression, but it's not like you have these majestic themes. And there's so much dialogue in a documentary, you have to be so careful not to do anything to distract from the dialogue because it's just dialogue all the way through. On a feature film, there are more holes in the dialogue and there are places where the music can poke its head through and call more attention to itself. I would say that me being sensitive to dialogue in documentaries helped me to be very sensitive to dialogue in feature films. So I would simplify, and then when they stop talking or during a scene change or something, or during a scene where it's just action, then I'm more used to letting the music really grow and make a big deal out of itself. Whereas in a documentary, the music's more like lighting. It's like a color palette. You just don't want to call attention to itself in a documentary.
Now, concerning your music itself, what are your influences?
Well, as far as film scoring goes, I was a big fan of Jerry Goldsmith. I loved his music for the Rambo series and Chinatown, and he seemed a very thematically oriented guy. And I just liked the way he did stuff, and he was always reinventing himself. I liked the early James Horner stuff like Willow. I loved that stuff. Thomas Newman, of course, How to Make an American Quilt is one of my favorite scores. Road to Perdition is a really wonderful, moody score that he does. And then I love Hans Zimmer, too. Hans Zimmer's Inception. I probably wore that soundtrack out just listening to how he did sort of an anti-thematic treatment with eight chords, basically, is the theme. And then I love John Williams. The thing about John Williams is he is a classically just deep orchestra with amazing themes and stuff. To be just brutally honest, I don't think I could do a John Williams-oriented type score. Not that I would want to, but I still listen to him just to be inspired. I mean, his score to Schindler's List is one of my favorites. Now, if you're talking about bands, I listen to more scores. Two bands that I love is Sigur Rós, the Icelandic band. I don't know if you're familiar with them, but they're very cinematic in their writing. You know, their guitar work and their percussion work is very cinematic. So I really like them. And I'm still a Beatles freak, man. I listen to them probably at least twice a week. Classical influences. I love Debussy. I love The Clouds. I like Beethoven. I'm kind of narrow on what I like about Beethoven. My favorite Beethoven piece is the second movement of his Symphony No. 7. It's just so moody and wonderful. And then I like Gustav Holst, too, just for the dramatic orchestration things that you can learn from something like that. My son keeps me up to date with a lot of game soundtracks. Like, he turned me on to Austin Wintory's beautiful soundtrack to the game Journey. Just an amazing, amazing. So my son, Riley, he keeps me up to date with a lot of that stuff. And he's usually right on, man. It's usually something that I stick in my iTunes right away.
Do you see yourself primarily as a music producer or a composer?
You know, what's funny, I see myself as both. And in a way, that sounds like a cop-out. But what's neat is when I compose a score, and even when I'm working on a mock-up, if I'm sitting here in my studio, I'm always looking ahead to the final mix. I'm looking ahead to how we're going to record this. What kind of personnel do I need to get this to happen? I'm working on how I want the mix to sound, how I want the bottom end to sound. So all those early years of producing records, even if I have somebody else mix or if I have somebody else record, it's still the kind of thing where I know what I want and I know how to get there. Several composers conduct, and that's fun. But for me, I want to be in the control room. So I always hire a conductor. I can stand behind the engineer and I can listen to how things are coming together. And I'm always looking ahead to that finished product. So I think the music producer and all those skills that I learned helped me be a better composer.
As you have already heard on today's show, you have composed some wonderful music. Would you like to record some of that music one day in the UK?
Oh, it's always a dream of mine to work at Abbey Road or Air Studios. I would love to do that sometime. And I think a lot of times that would just depend on the budget. Earlier on, I also worked with a composer as an orchestrator. So we did a lot of stuff in Prague. And those were good experiences. But my contractor here in Nashville one day, this was a good bit long ago, he said, look, we're tired of everybody going to Eastern Europe and different places. What would it take to keep you here? And I said, well, it's all financial. You know, it's, he said, and so he made me make a list of what a typical trip to Prague would cost. And he worked it out. I mean, it, you know, the union can be kind of picky about stuff. They're opening up more to being open to that. But that's why Nashville has sort of become a new place to go. Like EA Sports comes here and does a lot of their stuff. Sony Games comes here and does a lot of their stuff. Bear McCreary, he's a composer hero of mine. I really like him. He's done some stuff in Nashville. It's become sort of a place where people can go as an alternative to going to Eastern Europe or to Europe. But man, for me personally, I think if I stepped foot in Abbey Road, I would probably die and go to heaven. That and Air Studios are two of my favorite. Just reading about them and looking at pictures. I would love to work there sometime.
Which film genres do you prefer working in?
I think that I love mainly drama and action, and I feel comfortable with strong emotions, whether it's joy or sadness or crisis and reconciliation. I love that kind of stuff. I love things that have a redemptive story, but I love action scenes too. I'm in the midst now of getting a taste of doing something that kind of scares me a little bit, and that would be a comedy. And while Still Breathing had comedic moments, it wasn't really the kind of comedic moments that you need to score. So we'll see how that goes.
And which genre, which you haven't worked in yet, would you like to work in the future?
Yes, I would love to work in an SF sci-fi. I'm a big sci-fi buff. What would be great is if somebody came up and said, hey, Paul, we're going to do a movie on the Berserker series. And I would just go, oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I'm a big sci-fi reader, and that would be fun. A lot of times these days, score kind of blurs the line between music and sound design. And so I think a movie like that would have lots of places where the music could be part of the soundscape, and then you could break out into themes and stuff like that.
That was Last Chase and Last Fight from the 2016 Russian thriller Versus, original title Milo, with original score composed by my guest today, Paul Mills. My name is Jason Drury. Now, Paul, which of your fellow composers do you most admire?
Well, right now, I admire Hans Zimmer, not just for his music, but he is, like, I've seen some of his YouTube videos, and he did a thing called Masterclass, where he taught a sort of an online course. And hearing him talk about filmmaking, it's almost like he's a filmmaker himself, because the story is so important to him. And that's what guides his whole thing, is what is the story? Where are we going? So that's a big influence to me. I mentioned Bear McCreary before, and he kind of inspires me because he was known for doing horror and Battlestar Galactica. I don't recall the name of the director, but there was a director who was going to do, I think it was a film version of Death of a Salesman or Catcher in the Rye. But he wanted a film score that was like the film score of To Kill a Mockingbird, the Gregory Peck version. And Bear wanted the shot. And the guy said, well, I don't think you'd be right for it. So Bear goes out. Of course, not everybody could afford this. He goes out and does, I think he did a $40,000 demo. He hired an orchestra and a studio, and he superimposed this guy's script over a video. And he produced this wonderful demo of what the music could be like, which started a dialogue. And he ended up getting the film. And for me, that's why I am always willing to do a demo to try to get a gig. If it's a gig I want, invest my time and energy. I can't spend the kind of money that Bear did yet, but I can do a pretty good demo. So that inspires me to do whatever it takes to be able to keep doing this creative thing that I love.
Now, what are you working on at the moment?
What I'm working on now, and we just had a meeting, I just saw a rough cut of the Irwin Brothers' new movie, I Still Believe, which is, again, the story of Jeremy Camp. And, again, I'm helping on all the songs for that. So I'll be finishing that up. They're actually going to mix that the second half of November. Then, again, I alluded to this earlier, too. I'm working on my first comedy. It's with comedian Shonda Pierce. She's referred to as the Queen of Clean. She's a Southern girl, and she makes people laugh simply by talking about her life growing up in the South. But she's doing her first movie, and it's pretty funny. So I'm looking forward to the music that I'm going to do for that.
And finally, when and where can we see your latest release, Overcomer?
Well, it's in theaters now. And I know eventually it's going to start in some places overseas. I'm not sure where. But an easy thing to do is just Google Overcomer Theaters. And you'll get a cool little user interface where you can put in where you live. And it'll tell you what showings are available or when it's going to get there.
And with that, Paul Mills, thank you very much for joining us. I do hope you enjoy this program on composer Paul Mills. I'll leave you now with more music from his latest score, for Overcomer, which is now available in its complete form digitally from the Provident Label Group. So until we meet again, for me, Jason Drury, and my guest today, Paul Mills, is take care and happy listening. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Cinematic Sound Radio. I want to thank Tim Burden for providing his voice for all the bumpers and stingers you hear throughout the program, and David Cassina for providing Cinematic Sound Radio's theme music. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, please email us at cinematicsound@yahoo.com. You can find us on social media at CinSound Radio on Twitter and Cinematic Sound on Facebook. And if you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, please take a moment right now to rate and review the show. It really helps us rise through the ranks and helps potential new listeners find the show. And don't forget to check out Cinematic Sound Radio at cinematicsound.net.